It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Open Concessions Podcast presented by Toyota, featuring a weekly in-depth conversation with a Chicago Cubs-related personality. We are your hosts, Len Casper, Jim DeShays. We make up the Cubs television tandem. JD, we will chat with Adbert Alzolay. Looking forward to that conversation here in a couple of minutes. But the big news, not only in Chicago, but around the sport of baseball, is Theo Epstein has stepped down as the Cubs president of baseball operations. Jed Hoyer takes over. Well-deserved for Jed. Your initial thoughts on the big news this week?
Yeah, it's funny because I think everyone kind of felt or knew that this would be or could be Theo's last year with the Cubs. And he had, kind of implied that it might come sooner than we all anticipated. But it's still it's kind of a jarring bit of information when you get it. And shows up on social media or whatever, Theo Epstein is stepping down. Certainly grabs your attention. But man, what a run. You talk about promises delivered. He came here. He was the architect of the Cubs World Series team, obviously, had a great run. He's got a lot more on his plate going forward. It's going to be very interesting to see what he ends up doing either in the game or outside of the game. So, yeah, tip of the hat to Theo, and congratulations to Jed. As you said, well-deserved. He's got the resume. He's got the experience. And now he gets to be the number one and everything that comes with it. He takes the job at a difficult time, both in terms of this team and the game overall with COVID. And we anticipate some changes to this roster. So choppy waters for sure. But I think they've got the right guy steering the ship.
One other thing about Theo, his legacy is the success and raising the standards here, winning the World Series for the first time in 108 years. All of that stuff is absolutely true in terms of the quantitative analysis. And the qualitative part of it, I guess, wouldn't maybe have resonated quite as much without the tangible on-field success. But I think it bears mentioning his honesty, his self-awareness. I've heard the term empathy come up a lot. He's a very empathetic person. He made some very difficult decisions, but I thought explained them all very well in terms of competitive nature that he has. Ricky Renteria only got 1 year here, but when Joe Maddon became available, Theo was not shy to make that move. He acquired Aroldis Chapman, who had been suspended earlier that season for a domestic situation. He explained why he made that move. Not everyone agreed with it. But I thought, he kind of drew those lines in terms of, we thought that we needed to do this in order to make our team better, even though that move came with a lot of questions. I thought he handled the Addison Russell situation incredibly deftly. There was a lot of nuance with Theo, and that was a welcome breath of fresh air, so to speak, in an era where nuance gets lost quite a bit.
Yeah, and I think when you have that job, and quite often his quote would be, or his response would be, I'm doing what is in the best interest of the Cubs. There are probably times when, for personal reasons, he didn't like maybe the player he was acquiring or wasn't really comfortable doing certain things. But I think he always honored the fact that he was put in charge of running this franchise and trying to bring this franchise a World Series, and that was first and foremost. He even implied that a little bit in his press conference when he talked about, if he stays in the game but not running a club, how there's a different perspective, right? If he's working for the commissioner's office or working, not specifically for one team, but in the for the betterment of the game, you might push for certain things that you wouldn't do if you were running a club. And I think he walked that tightrope, as you said, deftly. He's a really clever guy, really smart guy. Obviously, sky's the limit. You know, says he doesn't want to go into politics, but I think he'd make a great senator someday.
So, Theo, we wish you the best. Thanks for a great 9 seasons. And today we will chat with Cubs 25-year-old right-hander Adbert Alzola. A quick word on Adbert, JD. His last 2 appearances, and we will talk to him about those in particular, were really eye-opening. And there are potentially a couple of spots open in the Cubs rotation. So he could be a big part of things in 2021. In fact, I would bet on it.
Yeah, I would think he has the inside track to a spot in the Cubs rotation right now. We'll see what trades happen. We'll see what the free agency looks like. But right now, it looks like he has a very solid spot in the Cubs rotation going forward. And, you know, for good reason. I mean, he's got a real nice fastball, curveball changeup, and now this slider that he's added. He's got a 4-pitch mix that has a chance to be really good. He's a smart guy. I think you could see in those last couple of starts, he's getting more comfortable at the big league level. And as strange as it may seem, the fact that there wasn't a minor league season and he spent as much time down there at the alternate site trying to, you know, rework some of his stuff, I think actually proved to be beneficial for him.
So enjoy our conversation with Cubs pitcher Adbert Alzola. Adbert, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
I'm good, guys. Thank you guys for the invitation.
So tell us what you're up to these days. You're in Arizona, correct?
Yes, I am in Arizona right now. Just started my off-season program 2 weeks ago, so we're back into the routine again.
So the time off, did you literally do nothing in terms of physical activity, just trying to recharge your batteries?
No. I had some time off, but I was active the whole time. You know, I will go hiking like twice a week. I will do some like biking and running too sometimes. So my body was pretty active during this whole time.
So what does the program, your off-season program now, look like once you get into a throwing and a training program? Do you guys have a good group there in Arizona working out together? Or are you working just you and a catcher? How much throwing are you doing these days?
Well, with all this COVID situation right now, so just I have one of the trainers right now with me that he's working with my shoulder. So he's my throwing partner right now, but it's right now we are at the moment that it's just more lifting than baseball activities. I just resumed my throwing program today, so today I went to up to 60 feet for the first time after the last game of the season. But I felt really good. So their main focus right now is more like getting stronger again, you know, like lifting, taking care of the shoulder work, and then from then we're just gonna start doing some more throwings and all that.
Hey JD, what program did you have in November after your season ended? See you in March.
Things have changed so much. It was like don't get hit by a bus, and we'll see you in spring training. that was kind of the program back in the day.
Adbert, I know you've had some arm issues in the past, and you never want to go through any injuries, but having gone through some of those things, is it in a weird way a good thing, because you're kind of more in tune with your body, and if you have little aches and pains, you kind of know what those are all about?
Yeah, thinking about that, like right now in the position that I'm right now, so yeah, it was a good thing that happened like 2 years ago. So I kind of learned from it, you know, my body learned it too. So now I know more about how to take care of my shoulder and my elbow and my whole body better than before. So I think it was in that kind of part, it was a good thing that happened to me.
And you lost some weight last offseason. Are you a vegetarian? Did I read that correctly?
Last year, yeah, my whole off-season program was in based vegetarian eating. But right now, I just cut red meat, but I incorporate like fish in my meals now, some chicken too.
How was that being a vegetarian? Was that a tough transition for you, or was it easy?
It wasn't that bad. Like the first 2 weeks, yes, it was a little hard for me, but then my body started like kind of get used to it. And I did it because like last year, I felt that I had some extra weight or extra fat, I guess, that I didn't want to have on my body. So it was like kind of like resetting my body again at that moment.
And is your wife a vegetarian as well? Does that make it easier to kind of have the same meals, or what sort of plan is she on?
So she's a nutritionist. So,
oh, perfect.
So yeah, so my meals are being so good for the last 2 years, I think. Because like she calculate all my macros, like, okay, if you wanna keep your body in 200 pounds, so this is all you have to do to do it, and you know, in just eating, you know, like this is the total carb or protein that your body needs every day to function at the level that you wanna be.
So she comes up with what to eat, and you cook it, right? You're the head chef.
We're taking turns now.
Do you have some skills? Are you pretty good?
Yes, I am.
you've been a pitcher for a while, but I'm curious to go back. I think you played some third base and a little outfield. Is that right? And when did you become a full-time pitcher?
Yes. So growing up as a kid, you know, liking baseball my whole life, so I used to play third base, but it happened when I was 11 or 12 years old. So we were in this game, and then I just got a land drive off my chest. So that was the last day that I played third base. I was like, you know what, I think I can throw the ball pretty hard, so I just gonna pitch and just play in the outfielders. I don't want to be involving this whole situation in the infielder, because I was like, no, I just can't do it. And then I wasn't that good at hitting at that moment. I'm still not that good, but I was like, you know what, I can throw the ball, so this is what I'm gonna do. So when I was 14 years old, that was when I started like getting more into pitching, and then I just became full-time pitcher.
Did pitching come to you naturally? Were you really good at it when you started, or what? If not, what did you have to improve the most at first?
Well, I always had the ability to throw a strike. Like since I was a kid, I would throw a lot of strikes, but I didn't throw hard when I was a kid. You know, like it was normal, but then when I was 16 years old, I didn't throw hard enough. You know, it was like around 88, 89 all the time. But then just, I guess, when I sign in and then I start all this process working, just my below just start like development.
88, 89 at 16 seems pretty hard to me. But you're saying there are other kids you were playing with that were your age that threw harder?
Well, then now it's even harder now, because like I have seen kids that are 16 years old throwing 97.
Yeah, it's insane, isn't it?
And speaking of your repertoire, there was a real shift, and JD and I noticed it, the harder breaking ball. Can you just tell us as much as you can about the development of your slider and having that intermediary pitch between your fastball and your curveball?
It all started back in South Bend. You know, we have this conversation. I had it with Breslow, James, and Ron Belong, that were the two pitching coaches down there. So Breslow had this like really good idea. He was like, I think with the way that you control your curveball, you're able to add another pitch, because he was like, you can use your curveball early or late in the game. It doesn't matter, because you have a really, really good curveball and you can command it well. And then he was like, your slider is just going to help you to have that like put him away pitch, you know, that the hitters not are like expecting that pitch right now. So we started working. I remember the first time that I started throwing sliders, it was like kind of like my curveball, because it wasn't that hard. It was around like 81 to 84 sometimes. So it was like kind of similar. And then the last time that I get sent down, it was when we really was like, you know what, let's put this in work and let's try to get that below a little bit up. So I remember my first bullpen after getting sent down, I threw 62 pitches in that bullpen. That was the longest bullpen that I ever threw in my life. I'm not going to lie. but the goal was like, I told the pitching coaches, I was like, until I don't hit 88 with this pitch, I won't stop throwing it. So the last four pitches of that bullpen, I was throwing a slider up between 85 to 88. So we caught it right there. Literally, I just took it into the game.
Do you think it was easier to develop this, you know, a new pitch at South Bend, you know, in that kind of a format, that alternative site, as opposed to if it was a regular minor league season and you were pitching as a starting pitcher, say, every fifth day? Did the kind of the different format there allow you to, you know, play with that pitch more and experiment more?
I think what really helped us to, like, get into development all those pitches real quick was all the technology that we had down there too. You know, we literally have a pitching lab down there, right? We had everything that you can ask for to get better. Everything was down there, I'm not gonna lie. Like, everything that you needed as a player, we had it in the facility down there. So I think that helped us a lot to, like, you know, just get a lot of information for every live BP or bullpen that I will throw down there. So I think that was one of the biggest difference.
So your last two outings, 9 innings, 15 strikeouts. And I mean, just us watching from the monitor, because we weren't in Pittsburgh or on the South side. I mean, it was nasty. And you had to notice the reaction you were getting from the hitters. And I'm just curious to know if you were even a little surprised at how effective that pitch was immediately.
I wasn't surprised, because I knew it, that if I was able to tunnel in my pitches, I knew it. I was like, I know the results that I can get of that pitches, but I'm pretty sure what really like helped me to be more in control of myself or mixing better my pitches during those games was the ability just to be there, you know, just to learn, just watching like Hendricks pitching, Darvish pitching, the way that they just work against the hitters and all that. So just watching all those details, I feel that I learned so much in so like minimum time over there. And then just having Q with me being my throwing partner every single day and just observing him the way that he throws the ball, I think that was huge for my develop this year too.
Yeah, I want to follow up on that, and being around veteran guys who've had a lot of success at the big league level, and how important it has been for you to not only being able to talk to them, but just watch them work. That has to be huge for you.
I mean, yeah, it's, to me, that's like one of the most important things, because I was like, okay, I can have the tools to be a big leaguer or to stay in the big leagues, you know, but to be a big leaguer, you just need to be around them, I think, too, you know. You just need to learn, like, what they do in the big leagues, because you won't do that in AAA. You know, to be a big leaguer, you need to be around big leaguers. So I think, to me, that was just huge, because I was able to just watch them, watch their routine every single day. So it's just so much that you can gain from that if you really like pay attention to every detail. So to me, that was huge.
Toyotathon is on, and there are great deals on your favorite Toyota models, such as RAV4, Highlander, Camry, Corolla, Tundra, Tacoma, and more. That's right, Toyotathon is on. And did I mention every new Toyota comes with Toyota Care, their 2-year or 25,000-mile maintenance plan? Visit toyota.com for details and get into your local Chicagoland Toyota dealer today. Current offers end November 30th. Toyotathon ends January 4th. Toyota Care covers normal factory scheduled service for 2 years or 25,000 miles, whichever occurs first. See your participating dealer for details.
We hope to have fans back in the ballpark in 2021, and by placing a ticket pack deposit, you'll have the opportunity to purchase tickets before the general single game tickets on sale date. There are 8 game packs and 14 game packs that can be customized to your preferences. For more information, visit Cubs.com/ticket packs.
We got to ask you about your journal. Don't give away any secrets, but generally, what are you writing between innings? Are you just literally writing down what happened against the batters you just faced?
Yes, I know. I'm keeping, like, let's say, sequence, you know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're, like, facing the side for the third time. So that's when you got to be more careful when you're pitching, because, I mean, they're just seeing you for the third time around, and they already know what the hell is coming to them. So when you sometimes you lose it, and the catcher too, like we're not a machine that will know the report right away, or like we will remember everything at the same time. So when I write things down between innings, I kind of like go through all the hitters again, and I just refresh my mind with the information that I had there.
So you might like write down first. So you'll look back and you say, "Well, first time up, I went fastball, curveball, and so second time up, I changed it, and third time up, I'm changing my sequence again." So it's just kind of little reminders that you keep going forward, you know, as the game progresses.
Yes, and just seeing the reactions or the swing that you're getting with your pitches, like I like to keep that writing too, because like after the game I do like a review of whatever happened into the game, so I always like to have all those details there.
I have to imagine there's a bit of a calming mechanism too, right? That if you immediately go into the dugout and focus on writing down, it probably is just part of your routine now, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just easier. It just like I feel it's so much easier to me to work that way, because I just have it. Like, I it's no I've been doing this for a little bit now, so it's like you say, it's part of my routine.
Do you ever write down at the top of the page, man, was I ever awesome that inning?
Your pitching coach in Myrtle Beach, Anderson Tavares, right? Was he the one who kind of talked about your pace and working quickly? And I know that's always a balancing act where you don't want to rush things, but I remember your big league debut. Compared to a lot of big league pitchers, man, you were pitching very, very, very quickly.
So I always like to work fast because I don't like the hitter thinking too much. So when I throw a strike, I go right away. You know, like I like to go right away. But in the big leagues, you have to control your emotions and you have to deal with all that too. So sometimes I will rush a little bit. I feel that Tavares, he just knows me so well because he was my pitching coach for 5 years in the minors. So he like literally knows the way that my arm and my delivery work. So we will just have these conversations about all that. So he kind of like got me through a lot of steps to get into the pitcher that I'm right now.
That's fantastic. How often do you speak with him now, even, you know, when you're in the big leagues? Do you talk to him after every time you pitch? Does he give you little pointers here and there? How does that work?
So I know him for 8 years now. So relationship is pretty big. I literally talk to him every single day.
That's great. That is great. And I also saw one of your mentors is Marwin Gonzalez's father, Mario. Is that correct?
Yes, he was the guy that offered me my first opportunity to like go and try out with a professional team. He was the one that like talked to my parents because when I was 16 years old, we really didn't know that was the age that you were supposed to sign as a professional player down there in Venezuela, because I was just going to school and I was playing for fun. You know, I wasn't thinking about to be a professional baseball player. He was the one that talked to my dad. My dad knows him for a long, long, long time because we are from the same state in Venezuela. So just started there and we started like training, doing more like pitching stuff, fixing my mechanic, fixing the way that I was throwing the ball and all this. So yeah, Marwin Gonzalez, dad, he was like literally the first one that gave me that opportunity.
That's fantastic.
Now, was your dad a player? Ball player?
So my dad, he never played baseball growing up. My grandfather was the one that took me to a baseball field for the first time. But my dad, he was a long time the trainer for the powerlifting team in Venezuela. So my dad is like my personal conditioning trainer or something like that, you know. he will always run my workout during the off season, and it's just everything. Like my dad will do like everything that has to do with my body. He will do it when I was down in the minors, you know, in all my off season programs and all that.
Oh, that's interesting. So your dad's a trainer, your wife's a nutritionist. You've got all your bases covered.
Pretty much.
What about your relationship with Wilson Contreras and, you know, being both from Venezuela? Is that a little more special for you and Wilson together in the big leagues with the Cubs?
So, well, our relationship comes from back in the time, because when I first signed as a professional, I play in Venezuela in the lower level, the winter ball they have over there, or they had over there during those years. So Wilson was the first one that catch me as a professional baseball player. So he was my first catcher at that time.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's going back 7 or 8 years ago then.
Yeah.
That was the year that he started catching for the first time. That was the year that he went back to short season to as a catcher.
All right, so you're a teenager at the time, but give us the scouting report on a young Wilson Contreras learning how to catch. At the time, did you say to yourself he's going to be in the major leagues, or did you think, ooh, he's got a lot to learn?
Well, at that moment, I mean, he was just destroying baseballs. So at that moment, you don't really care about, like, how is this going to be as a catcher. You will just be watching Wilson hitting all the time, the whole step into the batter's box, because he was just hitting absolutely bombs by that time.
You've got to be pretty proud of him. I mean, he got here before you did, but to see him become one of the top two or three catchers in all of the major leagues has to feel really good for you as a friend.
Oh my gosh, it feels amazing. Like, whatever comes to his way or to my way, I know he's gonna be happy for me too, as I am for him. So usually I'm gonna see him in 3 weeks from now, because I'm gonna go down to Orlando to spend some time with some of my friends over there and my agent. We have the same agent, so we're just gonna be hanging out for a whole week.
That's great.
Oh, that'd be fun. I want to shift gears just a little bit and just talk about when you first came to the States. I think it was Boise, their first stop.
In the
U.S. So talk about the transition, the language. I mean, how did you make that transition? Was it easy? Was it tough? Did you have mentors to kind of help guide you through? Because your command of the language, of the English language, is really remarkable. But I'm assuming that wasn't always the case.
So I think that a good thing for me was, like, when I was in high school back home in Venezuela. So to get out of high school, to graduate from there. So at least you had in the high school that I was going to, at least you had to make a conversation in English. To, like, okay, this guy is ready, to go to college and things like that. So I had a, like, really, really good English class for 2 years back home. So I knew it, like, the basic, but when I first got into airplane, flew to the United States, when we flew from Venezuela to Houston. When I got to Houston and then I just hear all the Americans talking, I was like, wait, this sounds so different than whatever I was talking back home. Because, I mean, it was just a whole different way to talk. So it was, for the first, like, month, it was hard for me to talk because I was, like, shy the first time. But the good thing to me was, like, when I first got here, I knew how to make a conversation. So I knew how to ask for things. I knew, like, I was like, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to be all over the place, at least.
And just being so young, I mean, what was the most difficult part of that transition? Or was it easy? Was it pretty simple for you once you kind of got pitching and into your routine? And what about living in the States that was different from what you expected?
So it's funny because my first year here, it was great. I had a good year in the rookie season. So it was hard for me in the part that it was the first time ever living without my parents for more than 2 weeks. I think so. I was like, okay, I don't know how to do things. So it was hard for me in that part, but, and then the eating.
Sure.
I will eat Chipotle every single day for 4 months. I'm not lying.
I would do the same.
I had Chipotle every single day. And then it was In-N-Out too. Then when I found that In-N-Out was that good, I was like, okay, now I can have one on one.
That's great. Okay, so was there any new food that you hadn't had in a while or ever that you really grew to love?
Not really. I've been having just a lot of different kind of food now. So,
just no red meat.
No red meat for the moment.
So you told us about your off-season program. As you look ahead to 2021, what is your big personal goal?
My big personal goal? Well, first of all, is to make the thing out of the sprint training. That's obviously the first goal to do. Then be part of the starting rotation is another goal. 175 plus innings.
Those are good goals. And there might be some opportunities. How much do you pay attention to off-season moves around baseball? Do you follow what's going on, or do you just worry about yourself?
I don't really follow that because I'm literally like in the off-season. To me, is the time that I have to like put 120% on me, because I literally have all the time that I can have to just get better for the next season, you know. So, but sometimes, yeah, I will go over Twitter or on the news and see what is going on.
All right, how about some quick rapid fire questions for you? Did you have a big league moment facing a particular batter where it was someone you had followed and admired for a while, and you thought, oh man, I'm facing this guy? Was there a guy last year or this year that you faced where you were like, uh-oh, here we go?
Oh, well, last year was definitely Robinson Cano, because, I mean, yeah. I grew up watching him as a Yankee player. So, to me, it was Cano. And this year, when Paul Goldsmith stepped in the batter box, I was like, here we go. This is the moment that we were looking for.
And you got Cano out, right, in your big league debut?
Yes.
All right. Well, who do you admire, a pitcher, but not a Chicago Cub? It cannot be a teammate.
Okay. Felix Hernandez.
And what is it about King Felix?
Everything. As a kid growing up back home in Venezuela, you always have these big names, you know, that you always want to follow. He was in that category for me. You know, I always would look up to Felix Hernandez. You know, like I was like, I always would tell, I want to be like this guy. You know, I want to be doing the same things that this guy is doing at that moment. And the funny fact of this is like, we're in the same agency, and we have the same exactly agent. So to me, it's just like kind of crazy.
When did you meet him?
I met him 3 years ago during a spring training.
And what was that like? You had to be pretty nervous.
Oh my gosh, it was just like a dream coming true, because I was like, he was my idol growing up. He's still one of them, you know. So it was a big moment for me.
And did he prove to be a really good dude? I mean, sometimes that can be a letdown if your idol turns out to be a not such a good dude.
No, a great guy. I love him.
Yeah, I've heard great things about King Felix. So, did you hear from him after you made your debut? Do you guys stay in touch?
Yes.
Would you ever give him advice if you saw something? hey, you know, you might want to do this with your breaking ball.
I mean, I won't tell them that, but I mean, if he ask for something, I'm down for that. Quintana will do it. Quintana will be like, whatever you see on me, I'm feel free to tell me. Like, I mean, you know your shit too, so.
Exactly. What about your hobbies outside of baseball and staying in shape? What do you enjoy doing?
I really love just spending time with the people that I really love, you know. I'm not a big video game guy, so as much time I can spend with the person that I love, I will take it over anything.
That's a good answer. JD, do you have any other quick fire questions?
I'm just thinking of the red suit that you wore to the convention.
Oh, yeah.
Are you a fashion guy? Are you a clothes guy? Because that was an attention getter.
Yes. I'm always being that way. I like being looking good all the time.
So like when you first, your first big league paycheck, or the first thing when you first started to make a decent money in the baseball world, did you... would you be more inclined to spend it on clothes, on jewelry, on cars, on
splurge? I'm pretty sure it will go to shoes.
Shoes?
Yeah. How many pairs of shoes do you own?
Oh my gosh. To be honest, I don't really know.
That many, huh? Yeah.
Yes, that's one of the things that I really like to do. I like to have good pair of shoes.
All right, last one. Favorite teammate you've ever had? It can be a minor league teammate or a big league teammate, but give us a name and why.
Favorite teammate, his name is Jesus Castillo. He plays now for the Brewers, but he used to be a Chicago Cub as a minor leaguer. With us, we trade him for La Stella to the Angels, I think.
Mm-hmm. And what is it about Jesus?
I know him since I was 14 years old. Our relationship has always been like brothers, you know. I just love the dude. He lives here in Arizona too, so he always, like, we're always hanging out together.
That's great. So if we asked him, his all-time favorite teammate, he would say you, right?
I mean, he has to.
Better, yeah.
Fantastic.
But I just feel blessed because I'm really can say that I have a lot of favorite teammates. Like, it's not just one or two,
sure.
two guys, you know. Like, I'm pretty sure I can pick a lot of the guys that I have played. They all can be like my favorite teammate.
Well, I'll tell you, Adbert, you've got a great energy and an aura about you. JD and I have really enjoyed watching you pitch. And I think JD would be all in on the 175 innings from you next year. the future and the very near future and the present is very bright for you. And we can't thank you enough for joining us today. Thanks for being with us, and stay safe and sound this winter, okay?
No, thank you guys so much for having me and having this time with me. I really appreciate that. All the blessings.
Well, that was fun. Adbert gave us some good biographical information that we can use the next time we see him pitch in 2021. Not a big surprise. Felix Hernandez is one of his heroes. And the one thing I always love, JD, is when you ask somebody who your hero is or was growing up, and then you find out that not only have you been able to meet this person, but you've become friendly with them. That's always a really neat story.
Yeah. And he's, this year we didn't have access to the players, and Adbert hasn't been around all that long, so we really haven't had a chance to talk to him that much in person. I'm really looking forward to doing that going forward. He's an engaging guy. He's a sharp guy. And obviously a very committed guy too, talking about his training and nutrition. I think he has an understanding, a guy, and you talked about it in our conversation with him. He's had some injuries in the past, and I think having gone through that, he has the perspective of maybe a guy who's been around a little bit longer than he actually has.
All right, should we dive into the baseball dictionary? Give me a letter, and we'll come up with a couple of baseball terms.
Okay. We don't have a used letter board, do we, Vanna? Let's go Y.
All right. Let's go to the back of the book here. Let's go Y. Oh, man. Did you have a word in mind?
I didn't. I just, Y is like philosophical. Yeah.
All right. Well, actually, in the Dixon Baseball Dictionary, X and Y are in the same chapter. That's how few words there are. All right. How about a yacker?
A yacker.
Mean, sharp, breaking, overhand curveball. The yacker, the Uncle Charlie.
Yeah. The yellow hammer. Is yellow hammer on there too?
I believe it is. Yes. That's another term for...
A
curveball. Let me find yellow hammer. All right, here we go. Sharply breaking curveball. Satchel Paige used that term. The etymology, the term is a colloquial name for a common bunting found in Europe. I believe a bunting would be a bird.
I think that's right. I think I've read that before. It's the way they swooped or something.
That's right.
Is why the curveball got the name the yellow hammer.
I like that. That's
is there anything great on the yacker? Like who first used yacker?
Let me find it.
Eckersley or somebody?
A yacker. There's all these Yankee terms here. Thomas Boswell used it, 1979. Dennis Eckersley used that term for his fastball.
Oh, really?
He called that his yacker.
Huh.
One more from the Y section. This was a team slogan, so I'll use this as a trivia question. Which team, and name the year, used "You Gotta Believe"?
I believe that would be the 1973 Mets, and I believe it was Tug McGraw who
ding ding ding
coined that phrase. Yeah,
you got it.
Yeah.
Nicely done. All right. Anything on your mind before we say goodbye?
No, congratulations, Kim Ng, first general manager, a female general manager in the major leagues, as the father of three daughters, that has been met with great excitement in our house and all around baseball. As a matter of fact, it's great to see people react to her hiring by the Marlins.
It's a great story. Don Mattingly was named the manager of the year for the first time. Unfortunately, as Cubs fans know, the Marlins dispatched of the Cubs in the first round and got to the second round. But things are definitely looking up for the Marlins, and I'm with you. That is a terrific hire. I don't know Kim very well, but she has been in the game forever. And it's a great thing for her, for the sport, and for women everywhere, and I think she's going to do a really nice job. That team is really intriguing, I think, going in to 2021. Aside from that, it's been pretty quiet here so far, getting into free agency and the like. Congrats to Trevor Bauer, who won the National League Cy Young Award. I thought you, Darvish, JD, would get a few more votes than he did, first-place votes, but I think you and I agreed going in that Bauer was probably the headliner, and Darvish a 1A, so to speak.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think you could make a case for you, but I think you can make a stronger case for Bauer. So I think the voters ultimately got it right.
All right, special thanks to Big Jim Obojkovic, Shane McGuire, Joe Rios, Matt Romito, Daniel Green, Adam Sobel, and for Jim Deshaies, I'm Len Casper. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review, share this podcast with your friends. Happy Thanksgiving. We will probably talk to you right after the holiday on Open Concessions, presented by Toyota.